Global gedacht, der Podcast, der die Welt auf den Kopf stellt.
Hello everybody and welcome to Global gedacht. In the name of the entire podcast team, Christine and I want to wish all of you a happy and healthy new year. We want to use this episode today to introduce you to someone very special who joined our Masifunde team in September. Babalo, who has been and will be our first very own South-North volunteer. Babalo is from South Africa and is here to support our work and get new perspectives. More than that though, Babalo is also here to share insights so that we can learn from new perspectives. They will support our podcast team in our journey towards active anti-racism and will offer us their critical perspectives throughout the year. Following Masifunde's changemaker approach, we hope that they will activate our minds and give us and you a lot of food for thought that we can further reflect on and share with our peers.
After talking about how Babalo came to Germany, the projects for Masifunde and the South-North volunteers more generally, we will also dive into a topic that Babalo actually brought to our attention, because in December we were chatting about Christmas and Babalo mentioned the colonial aspect of it. So what we want to do is to have a discussion of how we can maybe rethink Christmas and find a way to a more decolonial holiday in a way. You will hear soon what we mean by that, but first, we really want to give a disclaimer that the aim of this episode is definitely not to make anyone feel bad about celebrating Christmas in a certain way or about being Christian in general, but Rebecca, me, and the others in the podcast team are really curious about getting new perspectives on something that we grew up with and have not questioned on a level of post-colonialism before. And we hope to open your minds to this new insight or to new insights in general too.
You might wonder why talk about Christmas in January. It is in the past, no one will care about it until November at the earliest. But we wanted to let everyone have a normal and peaceful Christmas before we bash it. No, the bigger reason of course is that we wanted Babalo to experience German Christmas and to be able to draw some comparisons between the countries. But now I've definitely talked enough, so it's time to introduce our guest. Hello Babalo, thanks so much for taking the time today to speak to us. Would you like to introduce yourself a bit more? Where are you from? What is your background and how did you end up in Berlin with Masifunde?
Okay. Hello, Rebecca, and hello, Christina. So where am I from? So I'm from South Africa. I think that's the first thing. I'm proudly South African, as South Africans always say. And I come from a place in South Africa called, a province in South Africa called the Eastern Cape. And specifically in the Eastern Cape, I come from a town or a city called Gqeberha, which was formerly known as Port Elizabeth. In Gqeberha, I grew up in the township of Motherwell, roaming the streets there, playing pebbles, and just getting up to all kinds of things. But yeah, so in terms of physically where I come from, that's where I come from. And in terms of my background is actually in IT. So back in 2014 or 2013, when I was deciding what to do or what to study, I had decided that I wanted to study IT. And so I studied IT at the Nelson Mandela University. And whilst I was there, I was busy volunteering for a lot of different organizations and different programs. So the Nelson Mandela University, together with another organization called the Unity in Africa Foundation, had a program called iGEMS. So I volunteered a bit for that program whilst I was at varsity. And after varsity, I then worked full time for the program. I started firstly, I think, as as a computer literacy tutor. And then from then on, I became I think my title was recruitment coordinator or something like that. And also whilst I was busy enjoying being recruitment coordinator, a year or so later, I was then promoted to being phase three coordinator of the program, which at that time I used to take care of university students. And then transitioned from that to a more student management/program coordinator role, And then that is about where I first got in touch or got into contact with Masifunde. A friend of mine who works for Masifunde, Andy Siwe, reached out to me for some help and for some introductions because they were running an online program that involved a school somewhere in Limpopo in South Africa. And I needed to come in together with one young person who was in the engineering space and speak about a career in engineering and opportunities within that space. And so we did that. And since then, I've always, you know, been interested in the work that Masifunde does, you know, and have been following Masifunde online and followed the work that Usandi Siwe did online and just used to admire the organization. So when I was ready to transition from the iGEMS program into a different, you know, into a different path. At around about the same time, Masifunde had this opportunity. I don't know who exactly sent this to me, but I applied. And then the next thing I was invited by Jonas for interviews. And then I think within a few days, they chose me to be a part of, you know, or to be the one who comes to Berlin and who comes to help and to assist Masi Germany in this role. So it was that kind of flow. It was that kind of easy flow, and which all stemmed just from my curiosity about what Masifunde South Africa does, which stemmed from having, you know, seen their work, admired it from afar, wanted to get involved somehow. And when this opportunity came through, I was like, why not? You know, I've just transitioned from a job, and yeah, I just need to, you know, do something else. And then boom, almost out of nowhere.
Yeah, so you've been here since September, so you have had some time to get to know Berlin and Germany a little bit. So how do you like it so far? And what experience have you made? Like, is it, if it's positive or negative? Just tell us a bit about your experience so far.
Oh, okay. So, wow. First and foremost, the first time I arrived, it was around 4 or 6 o'clock. I arrived in Berlin via a train from Hamburg and was met by Johanna and Felix and Manelisi at the Hauptbahnhof. Is it? Is that how you pronounce it? Am I not butchering it? I arrived, and the first thing was wow. Hey, because I think I arrived there, you know, I came out of this like huge building, you know, with glass all over. And then from this huge building with glass all over, there was a green grass. And there's, I think, the Spree and the river. And, you know, it was almost, you know, getting dark. And, you know, and but there was still a bit of sun. And so the sunlight was hitting the bed of the river. It was like beautiful. It was gorgeous. And I remember making a post immediately after that. And I said, I felt like I was in an episode of Gotham City, the way it was so beautiful when I saw it. But I think since then, Berlin has been treating me really well. The people at Masifunde have been amazing. They've been super welcoming and supportive in my journey. I've learned a lot so far. I've been learning some German in between. But yeah, it's been loads of support. It's been loads of encouragement and love and just being taken good care of, you know. So far, I think in a nutshell, my experience in Berlin has been great, you know. And I think much of Berlin mirrors a lot of some of the bigger cities in South Africa. You know, but I think the one thing that I do enjoy is taking the train. At first it was super confusing and it was very stressful because there were a lot of different trains. There was the U-Bahn, the S-Bahn, the tram, there was a bus, and you had to know which one you take where. So initially, like, understanding all these posters on the wall, what do they mean, what the signs mean, was a bit confusing. But eventually, once I got a hold of it, yeah, it was like, boom, I'm flying through the streets.
I think this is the first time I hear someone compare Berlin to Gotham City, but I'm very glad that you're enjoying your time and that you have such positive experiences, especially with the trains, because I'm sure you know that many Germans are often very annoyed with the Deutsche Bahn. So Yeah, no, I'm very glad to hear that you're having such good experiences on your year abroad here. Speaking of years abroad, I mean, it's pretty common for Germans to, you know, go abroad for a year to volunteer. Many people do it after school, after uni or something. And, you know, for us in Germany, usually you go to a country in the global south. And in recent years, you can kind of see this development that more volunteer organizations are increasingly sending young people from the global south to Germany. So kind of the other way around. And I think, you know, well, we think that the goal here is, you know, to contribute to a more equal exchange. So what we were wondering is why you decided to do this program. I mean, you said you were very curious and very excited about the work that Masifunda is doing, but why do you think it is so important that people from the global south also come to the global north and not only the other way around?
Yeah, tough question. I've been asked this before. So firstly, you know, prior to this with Masifunda, I didn't even know that there was such an exchange. You know, I used to see a lot of German, I believe there was one at one point, an organization in South Africa called Dimension Data that used to train some of our young people in the program that I used to be a part of. And a lot of German visitors or German young people were part of that organization. And I remember one particular young man was very tall. His name was Vola, had lots of hair. And so I think that was the first time, you know, that I got the sense that there are young people who come from Europe into South Africa for whatever experience. But at that time, I never conceptualized or understood what the reasoning was for. And then, of course, being a part of this process through SageNet and Masifunde, I then got to learn a bit more that it has a lot to do, I think, with cultural exchange. It has a lot to do with breaking down stereotypes, broadening thinking, and all that kind of stuff. And I think, yeah, and I think that can only, you know, serve the greater good, you know, that can only serve the greater good. And I would need to think a bit more about why why it is important for people from the global south as well to come to the global north. So far, I'm just trying, I don't know if my mind is having a bit of a brain freeze, but I can't think of anything except for the same reasons, which is it's cultural exchange, it's broadening perspective, it's learning a bit more about the cultures, you know, in, you know, outside of South African borders, outside of Africa, you know, and also so far, whilst I've been here, I've been, you know, connecting to a lot of Africans in the diaspora, you know, have been tapping into a lot of conversations that they're having about migration, a whole lot of conversation that they're having about, you know, colonization, decolonial thinking, you know, and it's always interesting to hear what the perspective on this side is on those kinds of conversation and to hear it from people who come from different parts of Africa, you know. And I think, you know, in South Africa, although there are a lot of people who come from different parts of South Africa, I never really got to sit and have these kinds of conversations with them. But this side, I've gotten the opportunity to do that. And you know, so I think apart from the same reasons, I don't, you know, and of course, as you say, to equal the playing ground, I don't think there's any extra, you know, I can't think of any at the moment. I would need to think a bit more about that. Would need to think a bit more. No, I think also, I guess it has a lot to do with, you know, also, I think when you live in South Africa and you have certain types of, you know, and you always receive, the media pushes this agenda of African countries being third world. Yes, they are third world countries according to economic standard or whoever decides that, but you are always fed this, you know, this image of Africa having these many problems, you know, having these many issues, having these many struggles, you know. But I think also from a perspective, you know, of someone coming from South Africa to here, I also can see how Germany has also a kind of a number of problems that, you know, need to be worked on, you know, by society. And I also see how they are working on and how society in Germany is working on them. And someone said the other day that, you know, European countries have this have a great PR machine, you know. So through the media, you will always learn about, you know, how the grass is greener on the other side. But once you get there, you also realize that the same stereotyping that you experience back home, you know, is what you would experience here. The same issues with racism is what you would experience back here. You know, the same inequalities, like you can, it just needs you to walk through the urban station to see homeless people, you know, in Germany. So many of, in different respects, many of the issues that we face in South Africa and many of the problems that we have in South Africa are also prevalent here. And so I think it's good to see that these problems are not unique to Africa, and that poverty is not an African identity. And that struggle is not an African identity, but it is a problem that is worldwide and that is international, you know, but in different respect and in different ways for different reasons, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you just touched on a lot of very important and interesting points there. And I mean, you kind of mentioned colonialism, post-colonial decolonialism, you know, different experiences between Germany and South Africa or similar experiences. And that's definitely what we want to talk about more in this episode with you and kind of share our experiences. But before we come to that, we have one question that we always ask the guests we have. And because in the jingle that kind of opens our podcast, it always says that this podcast turns the world upside down. So we always like to ask our guests, how do they think or how do they feel that their work, so in your case, your work that you do with your personal activism, but also the work that you do for Mazifunda, how do you see or where do you see the potential for you to turn the world upside down?
Ooh, okay. You ask tough questions. okay, so I think to answer this one, I think I'm going to concentrate on a thought that I had this morning when I went to Learn for Life. This afternoon when I was at a Learn for Life session at a school in Berlin. And so for me, it was the realization. So there was a thought that was ringing in my head all day that truly, if we want to fix the world, we have to start with ourselves, right? And you know, the dysfunction that we see on the outside is a product of the dysfunction that we have on our outside, on the inside, you know? Yeah, it's a product of our internal dysfunction, you know, in how we see the world. But yeah, I think that realization of definitely, yeah, the outside world is a product of our own internal dysfunction. And to heal the world, we have to work on healing ourselves. In my work with the Learn for Life group, I always seek to, before we even start the conversation about climate change, before we even start the conversation about colonization, decolonization, inequalities in our society, I want us to first and foremost look at the relationship that we have with ourselves, you know. What kind of relationship are we nurturing with ourselves? What kind of conversations do we have with ourselves, right? And how do we treat ourselves? You know, how do we care for ourselves? And I always feel that the way we care for ourselves is a reflection of how we care for the world, you know, because it is always linked to understanding that, you know, climate change is not the story of Christina and Rebecca. It's not the story of Johanna, but it's the story of how will I survive, you know, in this world, you know, if all these resources are depleted, if we don't have any water or any clean drinking water, you know, those kind of things. So taking care of the environment and taking care of the world and making sure is about taking care of ourselves. Yeah, so for me, you know, how I see that then happening is that I believe if I point young people to have to harvest and to try and build a good relationship with themselves, a much gentler relationship with themselves, I think naturally we create gentler human beings who care not only just about themselves but about others. I started a poem yesterday. I don't remember where I wrote it, but it was something like, okay, never mind. But I started writing a poem, you know, with that thought in mind, which was when I realized that I'm a human being and I have these needs, you know, and I look at another person and I recognize that they are a human being too, and they have the same needs that I do, you know, it becomes easy, you know, because the first reference was that I'm a human being, you know, I am a human being. And I always loved that quote from Dr. Maya Angelou, I'm a human being and nothing human can be alien to me.
Yeah, I think it's a beautiful connection you make between this learning to care for ourselves, mean that we become kind of, you know, careful, nurturing, that we become a careful, nurturing person, which then in turn means that we can care for the environment, for the world, for the climate, and also very importantly, obviously, for other people. I think it's very, very, yeah, beautiful, but also very interesting bridge you kind of build between the two kind of aspects of it. We now want to come a bit more towards the topic that we prepared for today, is obviously kind of using this opportunity that we have to engage in exchange with you, with your experiences as a person from South Africa living in Germany now. And before we maybe share our experiences, you just experienced your first German Christmas. And this is kind of also the point where we got the idea for today's episode, is when we kind of had a little chat to you about Christmas in the end of last year. So how was it for you? Is it really different to what you know from your home, or were there similarities that you noticed?
There were quite a lot of similarities, but I think, you know, Berlin Christmas is on a different level. I think here Christmas is like huge, you know. During the Christmas season, I saw a lot of lights, there were a lot of Christmas festivals. You know, I think earlier on, you know, even way before Christmas was coming, you know, the shops that I used to, that I went, oh, in fact, immediately after Halloween, right, the shops, maybe a day or so later, they started to decorate, you know, everything with Christmas. And I was like, wow, is it that time of the year? And you could see also the snacks that are available on the shop floor. They're quite Christmassy, and, you know, and I've not really, and for me, Christmas has never been, and I think coming, I'm not sure about other South Africans, but for us, Christmas has never been, you know, a huge thing. You know, it was always just Christmas meant having, you know, time with family and friends, and, you know, people who worked in Johannesburg and in Cape Town and in different part of the city now come home. And so it was centered a lot around, you know, the coming home of people. It was centered a lot around just enjoying, you know, the presence of people that you haven't seen in quite a long time. So I think in that respect, it was similar, but also at a very, at a very explosive woo level, you know, the lights. It was a lot. It was a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in comparison to the US or so, then Germany certainly seems less of a fuss they make about Christmas. I feel like in the US it will be even crazier. But I guess we kind of started to adapt these also more American traditions or like cultural traits. And when I was in South Africa and also studied at the Nelson Mandela University in your city for a semester, I was there. I left in the end of November, so I only noticed the beginning of the Christmas time in the city. But it was interesting to me that it was also Santa that was put on display, and it was snow. I mean, it's summer in your country for Christmas. So there was like, no actual snow, but like in the decorations, I saw a lot of snow-like stuff. And that's also already like a bit of a weird thing that in South Africa, the people feel like they have to adapt to that Western or global North cultural. Yeah, that's just something I've noticed, but I guess we will dive in this maybe a bit more. But maybe before, also just to get a sense for how we spend our Christmas holidays, the three of us, and how important it is in our respective families to get like an understanding of the culture that is behind all that. Babalo, it was probably a bit different for you because you were away from home. Did you do something special during the holidays, or was it more like business as usual?
First and foremost, let me say, yeah, Christmas in South Africa has some snow in some shops. You'd see a lot of that. And you'd also see pictures of reindeers. We don't have a single reindeer in South Africa. And I doubt a lot of South Africans know what a reindeer is, but yeah, whatever. So how did I spend Christmas? I spent Christmas alone this year, but I also understand that you guys have a different Christmas tradition. And maybe for you, the 24th is more like the Christmas and then the 25th, I don't know what this is. So for us in South Africa, the 25th is Christmas Day. But so the 24th, I spent with friends. There are friends that I met here in Berlin, one from the United States and one other friend of mine who has been living in Germany for years, but is originally, I think, either from the Philippines or Indonesia. I think it's actually Indonesia. They're originally from the Indonesia. So I spent time with them, and one person brought a meal, the other person brought dessert, and just we sat around the dinner table, had a lot of conversations, shared a lot of stories. Yeah, so that is how I spent my Christmas. I don't think it was anything fancy, but yeah, that's generally how I spent it.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to Rebecca feeling weird about being in South African summer and then seeing like Santa and fake snow everywhere, because I remember spending Christmas one year in New Zealand with some family I have there, and it was the same feeling. Like, it was the middle of summer and it was hot, and everywhere were like, I mean, there were some statues of like surfing Santas, and but yeah, that was definitely very odd for me, because I think that the Christmas that I know and that I used to spend, or that I always spent with my family here in Germany, is pretty traditional one. Like growing up, we would always go to church on either of the Christmas days and or on the 24th, and then we would come home, and after coming home from like church, the presents would be there. And I think that only stopped like in the recent years, because I think the first year we didn't go to church on Christmas was the first big COVID year, because we didn't want to risk an infection in church. So yeah, I was definitely in my early 20s when I stopped going to church, and we haven't really started again yet. And I definitely grew a lot more critical, and a lot I think there's a big distance between the Catholic Church and me nowadays. So I don't think I'm really super keen to go back to church. But yeah, I think as I said, like growing up kind of the more like traditional Catholic Christian meaning of Christmas was definitely at the center for my family and me. And now I think I see the way that you do. Like, for me, it is just a time that I really cherish spending with my family, and kind of using this time of coming together and enjoying that, rather than the more Christian background of it. How do you feel about it, Rebecca? Is that similar to what you experience?
Yeah, in my family, it hasn't been about actual Christianity for quite a while. I mean, back when we were smaller, we did go to church, but I think it was more because it was the thing that you did, not because we actually believed in it. Not my parents didn't either, but we still went. Yeah, and now it's about the family. Every day of these Christmas holidays, I will get to see another part of the family, and then like my stepsisters and brothers, and like my cousins and my aunts and uncles. So it's really a lot of people I see every year. Yeah, and so it's a big cultural thing for me. It's less religious, but yeah. So, but it has always been quite important for my family. But yeah, it's just now that we talked a bit, or we got a bit of an understanding how the three of us spent our Christmases, we now want to get into the more critical part, but we wanted to get a little bit of an understanding first, because when we had the
I was gonna ask, because I feel for me you guys speak of Christmas as the traditional Christmas, and then the traditional Christmas, the Christian Christmas. And I've always wondered, for me coming from South Africa, I've never really connected to the spirit of Christmas and what happens in Christmas. This big white old man who wears red and goes down people's chimneys carrying presents, coming from the North Pole. I never connected with it, but I also never connected with the Christian sense of Christmas, where people wake up in the morning and celebrate the birth of Jesus. Because that's traditionally not in line with who I am, you know, as a person, as a Black person, as a Xhosa person, you know, growing up in South Africa. And so I think for me, maybe my question is, you know, where does this Christmas thing, you know, come from? You know, what is really Christmas? Because also when I observe it, a lot of German people speak about it. You'd hear them speak about Niklaus, you know, and I've always tried to figure out who is this Niklaus? What is the story of this Niklaus or Nicholas? And then how does it fit with the Christian birth of Jesus, you know, and the story of Bethlehem that we've always heard, you know, in churches and all that kind of stuff, you know?
I think what is important here is kind of what Rebecca said earlier, that we, or that Germany, we adopted a lot of the American traditions, because what you just mentioned is that Saint Nicholas is actually a saint. What we celebrate on the 6th of December, who kind of brings in you know, I don't know what year, but many years ago, he would bring like gifts to the children. So that's what we kind of traditionally, children on the 6th of December get like walnuts and mandarins and stuff like that. And then kind of Santa Claus is more who comes on the 24th and brings the present. It's kind of this like Coca-Cola American tradition, because I remember growing up, we would always get told, my siblings and I, that the baby Jesus, we have it's called the Christkind in German, that's the one who brings the presents on Christmas. So we were never taught that Santa Claus brings the present. And then this whole St. Nicholas tradition is kind of a different story. But because Santa Claus comes from America and we in Germany have this kind of St. Nicholas story going on, I think I do understand how that kind of weirdly merges for people from other countries. But yeah, it's actually for us definitely, or for me in any way, they're two very different things.
It's interesting, you know, it's interesting because, you know, I guess in South Africa, we also don't really, you know, celebrate and honor it in that way, you know, because South Africa, first and foremost, is not known for its chimneys. So certainly there's no, we don't have snow, you know, there's no reason to have a chimney in summer. And no one's, it would definitely be weird if a person came running down through the chimney at night. It's like, I don't care if you're bringing milk and cookies, honey, but you better get out of my house.
Yeah, I guess the whole Christmas traditions and explanations are a bit all over the place, actually. But yeah, and it is particularly strange that you in South Africa, you adapt these traditions that are connected to winter and like these things. And that kind of brings us to the whole point that you have Christianity in South Africa because of colonialism and mission work. So I guess that brings us into the critical topic, because when we had our first podcast meeting with you and talked about the coming episodes for 2023, you actually initiated this episode in a way about a decolonial Christmas. And maybe you can share with our listeners how you came up with this and what is on your mind regarding Christmas. Why do you think it's a topic that we should address in this podcast?
So for me, it was in South Africa. I think there's a huge conversation happening in South Africa, specifically within the Black community of South Africa and within the traditional communities of South Africa, that where are our own traditions, you know? What did we used to do, you know? So we see these, you know, we see this the Santa Claus, we see this baby Jesus, you know, being born, but where are our traditions, you know? How do we as Black people and Xhosa people of South Africa fit into this narrative of a Jesus being born somewhere whose name is not even linked in any way to our language, you know? But however we've adopted, all of us, you know, because, you know, quite a lot of South Africans are Christians, you know, so I think, you know, so I've always, you know, listening to traditional leaders and listening to some of the conversations that are happening within South Africa, it's always also been a question on my mind, you know, what is this Christmas thing, you know, and why are we so eager, I guess, as a people, you know, and as Xhosa people as well, to celebrate and honor, you know, this person that we have no DNA link to? Why are we so eager to honor this person who, you know, who doesn't even hail from the same land, you know, as us. Where are our traditions? Where are our ways of being? So I've always, you know, it's always been a concern of mine.
What I found really interesting is when you said that kind of we as like global North, Western, whatever people, we kind of assume, you know, that Christmas is this universal thing and that everyone can kind of connect to Christmas because obviously in December we celebrate Christmas, but that, and for me it was always, you know, I never questioned it. I mean, it was like, yeah, it's Christmas time. But I thought it was really interesting that you just say, you know, it's not a bad thing to celebrate Christmas. Everyone can celebrate Christmas if they want. You just kind of need to be a bit more, you know, raise awareness a little bit that for many, many cultures and many countries and people in the world, it's not actually a thing. And the only reason it is a thing is because of colonialism and because, yeah, colonists brought it to their countries and made it a thing. But that we kind of need to be aware of that it's not a global phenomenon, that it's a very Western Christian phenomenon.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. And I do remember saying that. I also do remember saying a lot of things about, you know, how Christianity was also a tool of colonization and how we, a tool of eroding our cultures, a tool of eroding our identity, a tool of eroding our connection to the earth and to the land, you know, a way in which land was stolen from us, you know, because in us letting go of some of the traditions that connected us to land, we then were able to let go of land itself because we couldn't connect to the value of what land means to us. And so you find a lot of Black South Africans in South Africa being landless, you know, and sometimes we do not connect Christianity to the reasons why a lot of Black South Africans are landless. You know, we do not connect Christianity to the reasons why a lot of Black South Africans are poor today. We do not connect Christianity to the atrocities that a lot of our people over time have had to face. And we've always thought of Christianity as this big, great teddy bear, you know, that is warm and that is a safe haven that we go on Sunday to church and we sing and we glorify this amazing God, but this God has not been amazing to all of us, you know, and particularly for Black people and a lot of Black people who are, and a lot of people who are not Christian and who are non-white, you know, but to a lot of people, you know, Christianity was not freedom, you know, Christianity was not peace of mind. Christianity were shackles, you know, that ensured the erosion of their identities, the erosion of their cultures, the erosion of their traditions, the erosion of their wealth, and their drop in social status, you know. So, and so I think sometimes we go into the festive season in a very celebratory mood, you know, in a very festive sense. And we speak of going to church on Sundays and we speak of going to church and celebrating Christmas, a Christian, you know, fundamentally at its core, it's a Christian holiday. We push it on mainstream media, you know, television that is accessible to everyone as if this thing is also not a symbol of oppression for many people, you know, from different spaces, you know. And of course, this is not me saying, you know, Christianity is evil, Christianity is wrong. There's a lot to investigate in how Christianity was used as a tool to perpetuate enslavement, how it was used as a tool to destroy as opposed to a tool to unite, you know, and how currently a lot of people are suffering from those consequences. You know, and so as a person who doesn't particularly identify as, you know, as being Christian, you know, I find it problematic that every year, you know, everyone almost everywhere across the world and even in countries where, you know, the people are not Christian, you know, you have this thing, you know, being pummeled into their faces. And so that's where the idea of a more conscious, you know, Christmas season, you know, maybe a Christmas season that is not just about consuming, a Christmas season that is not just about celebrating, but a Christmas season that is also about thinking and conversation, a Christmas season that is about reflection on the, I don't know if the English word is culpable, but complicit, on the complicitness you know, of religious spaces, in creating, you know, the kind of oppressive spaces and institutions that we have right now today, you know. Yeah, so my grandmother is in South Africa. My grandmother in South Africa was a traditional healer. My father is a traditional healer, you know, where I'm going is that for the longest time, you know, the law in South Africa, which was based, I think, on which is somehow based on Christian values most of the time, or a Christian sense of interpreting the world, you know, and of course it was in apartheid at that time, you know, was used to demonize, you know, these practices of healing that a lot of our people relied upon. And that demonization still continues and is being perpetuated up until this day. So I think for me, when I was thinking of the Christmas season, its links to Christianity, I felt a missing component there was a component of reflection. You know, I think a missing component for me was a component of sitting down and deeply reflecting on how, you know, Christianity was complicit in all these negative and toxic social structures and social problems that we have today. And that how these big events, you know, that are so-called centered around family, around joyousness, are also in a way a form of pacifier, a way to turn our eye away from the really important conversations, you know, in our society. You know, somehow in our joy, you know, we forgot that they are a ton of people, you know, who will be going back to homes, you know, to relations that are troubling, that are violent, that are, you know, so it allowed us to turn a blind eye to that. It allowed us to turn a blind eye to the fact that a lot of people, you know, are out there in the cold, you know. It allowed us to turn a blind eye to mindless consumption in the name of joy and in the name of Christmas and in the name of happiness. We've turned a blind eye to the fact that every shopping mall everywhere, you know, is consuming a lot of energy. You know, at this point, the same energy that we were told to conserve, you know, throughout the year, turn off the lights, you know, turn off the heating, you know, those are the messages that we sent out throughout the year. But somehow during the Christmas and festive season, we forget about that. You know, somehow we turn a blind eye to that. And so that's why I often say it becomes a pacifier. And so for me, Christmas and the festive season is, I think, should be a time of reflection. You know, it should be a time where even at the dinner table, whilst we're eating our lovely turkey, I don't know what people eat during Christmas, we should be raising conversations about decolonization. You know, we should be raising conversations about climate change. Yeah, and I know maybe for some people that might not be ideal. You know, give us a break. You know, and perhaps that's okay if you're not ready to engage at that level. But that for me was what, you know, I spent Christmas alone, and I spent it thinking about that.
Yeah, I mean, I have some thoughts on that, because when you just said that, of course, here in Germany as well, you mentioned before in a different context that all of the lights in Berlin were surprising you, like all of the Christmas lights, and of course that takes a lot of energy. And I just wonder, I think that hell would break loose if in Germany, if like Muslim communities would find ways to use that much energy for a religious celebration. And just because it's very, yeah, and just because it's so intrinsical in our society and in our culture, and it's like it's just a worldwide thing, then it's suddenly okay. And so that was one of the thoughts I had on that. I think the people would go crazy. And then, I mean, it's something you said a while ago, but it's so interesting that when you connected Christianity to the land loss of the people in South Africa when the colonizers came. And that reminded me of something that I came across when I did some research. I tried to do some research, because it's actually, there's so little information out there on the internet about the colonial background of Christmas and just Christianity as a whole. I googled mission work in South Africa, and then I came across like dozens of websites still doing mission work in South Africa, and it's still happening, I guess, in a different way, I would hope, but I don't know, I have no idea. But I came across a quote by Desmond Tutu, because he said that the colonizers came with the Bible and the people had the land, and then the people got the Bible and the colonizers got the land. So I really like that quote, and it just reminded me of that. So that's just something I wanted to tell.
That is so true. You know, I think I see the value, you know, and also I don't want to come across as if, you know, I'm attacking Christianity or I'm attacking a particular religion, you know, Antichrist. I'm pro thinking. I'm pro conversation. I'm pro, you know, looking at things differently. And I guess that's the invitation that I'm putting out there, you know, an invitation to think critically about the situation that we're in and what each and every one of us, you know, in the different spaces, you know, what role we played to create the kind of situation that we're in. And I think collectively we all agree that the situation that we are in is not really ideal, you know? And so we all need to think critically about our role, you know, the role that we play in creating this not so ideal situation that we're in together. And so, yeah, I completely agree with Utatu Desmond Tutu, Tatomkhulu Desmond Tutu there. And really, I think one of the things that, you know, Christianity did at that time was to pacify our people, you know, preach peace in the face of violence. And is that wrong? And I think we can go into a long debate about, was that wrong, you know, to say when they take your land, turn the other cheek, you know. But I can also, I think the me, you know, the me who is pro-peace, you know, is also able to see how that was weaponized against a lot of our people, you know, how the use of the Bible, the use of, you know, Jesus and some of the ways of being, some of his ways of being and some of his lessons were weaponized against our people, you know, and to create the kind of struggle that we're in as a country right now, you see. So it's interesting that I'm not the only one who sees it, you know, that the Archbishop Desmond Tutu, being a Christian himself, and I think maybe we should take a lead from him. We should take a lead from him and start to critically think about, you know, because ultimately, this whole colonial thing that I think we all agree was wrong, this whole slavery thing that we all agree was wrong, happened under the watch of Christians and Christian people. The suffering that we see in the world today happens in the watch, you know, of Christian people. The churches, you know, open their doors and they welcome people to say, come and pray about it. You know, is that the only role that the church can play, you know, in this situation? And maybe that's a different conversation, but ultimately I think there's a lot to be critical about within the Christian community, you know, about its role in society today, its role in society yesterday, you know, and its continued role in the world.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. There is so many different conversations that we could link to that and so many different topics that we could go into depth with these kind of all these ideas you gave us or you've raised. But what I think is really beautiful what you said is kind of that you say you want to, you know, you want to send out an invitation to reflect on thoughts we have, on traditions we have, and kind of critically question our role, the role we play, and also the position we have. And I think you definitely succeeded, and you know, I mean, we're only having this episode because you kind of brought this topic to our attention, and you definitely achieved, you know, to make us question this festive season that we've, you know, celebrated for 25 years now. And so, yeah, thank you for that. Thank you for raising the topic. Thank you for being here, for taking the time, for chatting to us. And I think I can speak for all four of us in the podcast team that I can say, you know, we're very much looking forward to having you as a advisor by our side for future topics to come. Maybe as a little sneak peek for our listeners, you're definitely going to be an advisor for us on the topic when we talk about gender. But yeah, for now, let's stress this kind of invitation you send out to reflect and to think critically. And yeah, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate, you know, the conversation and you obliging me and my crazy thoughts that, you know, that I have. So yeah, thank you. Thank you so much to both you and Rebecca for having me. And hopefully I've given some people a food for thought and, you know, a cause to reflect and to think as well. You know, how differently can we do this? You know, can we preserve the values of Christmas, which I think are important and good? Can we preserve our need to rest, our need to connect? Can we preserve, you know, our value for family, you know, that we so love around Christmas, whilst at the same time engaging in critical thought, whilst at the same time being considerate? And yeah, I think there are a lot of people doing a lot of different things. You know, Sabrina at some point sent me there was a link that she sent me of another indigenous people somewhere else, you know, who have decided that during this festive season, they want to revert to their own way of life and their own way of being, you know, and have come up with a new Christmas tradition as well. So, I think maybe there's a lot to learn as well from those spaces about how to have, you know, Christmas differently. But yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Also, thank you to all of our listeners. As I already said in the introduction, this episode was not about putting Christmas in a bad light or about degrading the meaning that each of you might connect with this holiday. But as Babalo also said, it is important to be aware of our own subjective image of things or celebrations or traditions, and to also be aware of how practices that might be completely normal to us in Germany or other countries in the global north have very different meanings or connotations for people in other parts of the world. We are very interested in your perspective or in your opinion regarding this topic of this episode, and we would love to hear from you either via our Masifunde Instagram page or in an email to podcast@masifunde.de. The next episodes will also be related to the topic of colonialism, and we hope you'll tune in again for the next episode. Until then, bye-bye.